Our growing need for energy and our desire to make more of it renewable has set up some other tensions beyond just where to put big power lines. There's long been a dispute over how to account for so-called behind-the-meter solar, the kind you might put on your home or business to try to get off the grid. Energy analysts are seeing that, especially during heat waves like the one that's gripped New England for much of the summer, this rooftop solar can actually have a big impact on our energy needs. Sam Evans Brown is the host of the Outside In podcast at New Hampshire Public Radio. He also really enjoys nerding out about solar power. Welcome back to the show, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
So you and I and Fred Bever, who we just heard from on the show, were all busy one night on, I guess, what we call energy Twitter. And we were all following along this guy, Joe LaRusso. He's the Energy Efficiency and Distributed Resources Finance Manager at the city of Boston. And he was sharing this kind of complex and interesting Twitter rant that had to do with behind-the-meter solar. And it's happening right in the middle of this gigantic series of heat waves that we have here. Take us through a little bit about what Joe was trying to tell us about BTM solar.
So BTM solar is, of course, solar that's been installed at a site that is operating behind the meter. So it's not the kind of thing that the grid operator can just call on and say, hey, you know, what's happening over on your solar array? It's stuff that they have no real visibility into. And what Joe was doing is he's pointing out something that solar advocates have been arguing that might have been theoretically true for some time, that during peak demand events, like really hot, sunny days, photovoltaic arrays are just cranking because that peak demand happens in the afternoon on sunny days, and that's when solar panels are operating. And so why do we care about that? We care because at these moments of peak demand, we rely on some of the dirtiest and most polluting power plants in our New England fleet that sit idle for like a huge chunk of the year and are incredibly expensive to run. So anything that reduces that peak demand on these hot days is very, very important for reducing pollution and carbon emissions and, of course, saving us a lot of money. And so Joe's tweets, what they did is they took a ISO New England press release about operations during this heat wave, and he broke out the numbers. And he pointed out that at the moment that we historically see peak demand, which was around 2 p.m., there were 2,000 megawatts of photovoltaic generation on the grid. And so at that moment, behind the meter solar, the stuff that the grid has no real visibility into, was producing about 11% of New England's electric demand. So that's a lot of expensive and dirty peak generation that's being displaced.
We also saw a behind-the-meter solar power map that actually went town by town across our region. What exactly did that show us?
Well, it shows us that policy matters, right? So if here in New Hampshire, we have something called a renewable portfolio standard, it's an incentive regime for small and large renewable energy generators, and Massachusetts has one as well. And so if you compare New Hampshire and Massachusetts and look at this map, you see that there's very little solar in New Hampshire and Massachusetts has a ton. Well, if you dig into the policies, a renewable energy credit, which is the sort of unit, it's like a market-based unit of renewable characteristics of electricity that you can sell and get reimbursed for having solar on your roof. In New Hampshire versus Massachusetts, it's 1/10 of the price. So a Massachusetts incentive is 10 times as generous as the New Hampshire ones. And of course, so what you see is that there's a ton of solar in Massachusetts. It's almost 23 times as much in the Bay State as here in the Granite State. So really what you see is state policies have been what's driving the deployment of this solar.
If behind-the-meter solar takes so much of a load off of the grid, it probably prevents rolling blackouts, the problems that we've seen during other terrible times in our energy history. It's going to cost us less over time. I guess I'm wondering, Sam, why we're not seeing more states take the road that Massachusetts is taking and just try to put more BTM solar up there. Why aren't we seeing more of this in New Hampshire and other states?
Well, so this has been the argument for years, is that when you install solar behind the meter, you as a buyer of electricity, you've reduced your electric bill, but you're still getting benefits from the grid. And so this has been this anti-solar talking point for a very long time, is that you're pushing the cost of maintaining the grid onto non-solar customers. And the real energy nerds like Joe LaRusso have always been pointing out that solar does have this benefit of reducing peak summer demand, and that benefit accrues not just in reduced pollution, but in reduced cost to the whole grid. So the question has always been, how much is this benefit worth? And are solar owners saving the grid as a whole more money than they're pushing off onto the rest of us? And all the studies that I've seen on this question have said that yes, especially in this early phase of solar deployment, behind the meter solar customers save us more money than they cost us. But here's where this gets really slippery, is that as we're getting more and more solar producing more and more electrons at the same time of day, you know, supply and demand, the market says that each of those incremental megawatts will be worth less. And so the benefit to the grid starts to decline as we get more solar. So eventually there will be this moment of reckoning where the value of intermittent solar will start to plummet, and the solar industry and the grid as a whole will have to wrestle with that.
When it comes to a lot of these issues, Sam, we're kind of toddlers. California is always in the lead on these issues. What can we learn from the state of California all the way on the other coast?
In California, you see what happens when you have rampant growth of behind-the-meter solar, but no real additional policies early on anyway to deal with the effects on the demand. And so there's this thing called the duck curve. So if you imagine a graph of solar demand through the course of a summer day in New England, what you see is this gradual rise from the morning when everyone first wakes up, peaking again traditionally around 2 p.m. when it's hottest and the air conditioning is really cranking, and then gradually falling again as temperatures fall and folks start to head to bed. But in California, there began to become these concerns that we're putting out so much solar, putting electrons onto the grid in the middle of the day, that long slow curve would get interrupted mid-morning and demand would begin to fall because of all the solar cranking out. And so demand slumps through the sunniest part of the day, but then as the sun starts to go down, would start to rise very steeply in the afternoon as people head home from work. And the problem there is that there's this concern that power plants wouldn't be able to ramp up quickly enough to deal with this surge in demand. That was this concern in California, that they were the sort of first to cross the wire installing a lot of behind-the-meter solar, and they were the first ones to start to have to wrestle with this and figure out what to do in order to keep the lights on. And so there are a lot of things that they're working on. You can increase energy storage. Of course, that's the golden child that usually gets mentioned. But there are also demand-side measures. You can create incentives for people to shift their electric usage with appliances like washing machines and dryers and hot water heaters towards low demand times, and that'll help to smooth out the duck curve. They say you can teach the duck to fly.
Sam Evans-Brown is our resident energy nerd. He also hosts the amazing Outside In podcast from New Hampshire Public Radio. As always, Sam, great to talk with you. Thanks.
That was super fun.